हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावरीतमस्तमाविर्यविषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 20. So then, concluding that part, therefore when a person has attained associations with devotees, atta, after that, he will inquire about Brahman. Mm-hmm. So now we're also getting to more of these essential points. Because you know, Vedanta Sutra, that's the whole point, is what is the essence of the whole thing. So now we've established, before atta, means you have the point of atta attaha, right? So it means performing the Vedic ritualistic activities, then attaha, what will be after that, that furtherance, then one will naturally then inquire about the Supreme. Right? So now we're getting into a finer point, is that in performing the ritualistic activities or the Vedic activities, what is the actual most essential of all the ritualistic activities? Right, that of surrendering to the spiritual master, right, approaching the spiritual master. Having done that, then one's inquiry about the supreme will actually have effect. Does that make sense? Yes.
How is that a ritualistic can be meaning like initiation of the yajna?
See, that the whole thing is what we're trying to do is broaden here the words, right? So. Words are only there to express concepts. So therefore, if we have a narrow understanding of words, it means we have a narrow understanding of the concept. So we widen the concept, or we widen the meaning of the word. Does that make sense? So, now when we hear the word ritual, we simply mean something that is some kind of mechanical thing that's really, really different than, you know, opening a tinny or something. Right? Like that. So, we're trying to move on to the point is that ritual is activities, recommended activities, right? You know, so even taking a bath, anything like that. So we can say but the Vedic is so ritualistic, the Western's not. I remember my mother putting on a face every day for about 40, 45 minutes. Is that a ritual or not? You know, you have to put on the base things, then you put on the other things, then you put on the eyeliner, then you do the eyeliner. Yeah. Okay? So, that's the whole thing, is that everything's a ritual. Get into your car, right? You know, you sit down, put on your seatbelt, check the mirrors, do this and that, see that it's not in gear, you know, all the things, and turn it on. You know what I'm saying? Everything's a ritual. It's just a matter if we're used to it, we don't think it's a ritual, we just think it's natural. And if it's different from whatever is the rituals we're used to performing, we'll say, oh, that's ritualistic, that doesn't belong to us. Does that make sense? So we're trying to break that and go beyond it. That, of course, if we're born into human society, we practice human society, then the rituals of Krishna consciousness would just be the furtherance of understanding of the rituals we're already performing, right? So if one's from such a background, then all the different activities that are done in the daily, you know, the dinacharya, right? The daily activities would be the same as we do in Krishna consciousness. Only thing is, because the consciousness would be improved, therefore the focus would be on, rather than I do these activities because of the benefit I get, you know, fruitively it would be I go to the activities, the benefit I get means if I perform the activity without attachment, naishkarmya, I get liberated, to go further beyond that into I perform these activities without attachment. And so if I perform the activity, I get a result. I perform the activity without desire, I get liberation. So now I'm performing the activity, getting a result. I am not doing it for the result for myself. That puts me on the spiritual platform. Then that activity now is going to be offered. The result I've gotten from the karma is going to be offered to Krishna. So it becomes bhakti. So we see there's natural stages. So human life begins with that first stage of following the Vedic rules and regulations because, you know, you should follow them and you also want to follow them because of the material benefit you get. So going beyond that, right, that's the Atahas. Going beyond that, that's where we inquire about the Supreme. But how will we know about that Supreme? How do we actually seriously be aware that there's something beyond unless we've approached the spiritual master? Right? So there's the first question on who am I, why am I here, this and that. That begins actually human life. Right? So then doing that, you approach the spiritual master from that, then you can actually properly hear about and understand the Supreme. Right? Does that make sense? So we have the aspect of that performing the following the rules and regulations of the Vedic culture. That's the first aspect of Atta. But more than that is we've approached the spiritual master. Right? Because that's the real point of the whole Vedic system. Having done that, now we can inquire very properly. So there has to be an interest. So we're following the rules and regulations, so that's good. So we'll basically say human life begins here. But then when you inquire, who am I, why is that, then we'll say actually now they're situated in human life. Right? Then when they accept the spiritual master and then take it to understand the transcendence, then we can say now we're talking about the transcendental platform, the actual purpose of human life. Does that make sense? So it's just like Prabhupada mentions about Brahmins. First you have the Bhatu, or Dvija, who means he's been initiated into the Gayatri Mantra, but he doesn't have any knowledge or skills, but he's still on the Brahminical platform. Right? Then he studies, then he becomes a Brahmin. Right? He becomes a Pandit. But then, the real Pandit is one who understands the connection of all this with Krishna. Right? So we see these three stages. So that's what we're talking about here. Just following Varanasi, that's just the beginning. Okay. Then having that there is the beginning, then it will come to the point is, well, what is life for? Because if you live a life in the mode of goodness, then naturally you inquire, why am I doing this? Okay. So we're saying, no, we're Westerners, that means we haven't inquired yet, so we're not human yet. Because we think that's an identity. We think that's real, it's important, it will give something, there's some benefit. Like that. Does that make sense? So when we, by performing the activities in goodness, we'll go beyond that. So someone situated in goodness will go beyond the conditioning, inquire about it. Why? What's the importance? Because it doesn't give anyone any benefit. But in passion and ignorance, one is unable to see that. Right? And so they'll come up with philosophies why they don't need to see it, or it's not important to see it, or those who see it, they're fanatics. But it's all passion and ignorance. So goodness means it's knowledge. It's illuminating. So that's the whole idea, is human life begins when we situate ourselves on the path of illumination. Then we'll inquire, why? Because I'm doing things nicely, I'm not satisfied. Why? Then you start to be able to see the difference. You're ready now to see the difference between matter and spirit. Then, by approaching the spiritual master, then one can actually understand. Right? Then, Brahma Jigyasa. Right? Then it has real meaning. Before that, there's a general inquiry, but it's not specific. It's just, why am I here? Why am I suffering? Why? It's generic. You understand? But then, when we understand about the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the soul, then it becomes specific. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes?
Despite the lack of humanity in our Western birth,
yes,
Because the association of devotees is such the essential element.
Yes.
And still, without Purva Mimamsa, come.
You can, yes. That's the whole point, is that since the position of Uttara Mimamsa is the natural state of the living entity, and then the activities of Purva are in support of that, right? See, Purva Mimamsa means the results of that are the goal. So the Purva becomes the primary. But in Uttara, it's not. It's secondary. It's not that the followers of Uttara Mimamsa don't practice the activities of Purva. It's just that they're secondary. They're only the door through which you express the devotional activity. Right? Does that make sense? It's not that, okay, Karma Mimamsis know how to cook, but those in Uttara Mimamsa don't, because they, you know, it's that they know how to cook for Krishna, so they take it to the next step. So instead of taking the secondary as the primary, the goal, then it only becomes a support. Its only value is how much you can support and give manifestation to the primary. Right? So that would be.
Would it be correct to say that for us, our Purva Mimamsa is basically following Pancharatra?
The Pancharatrik. Yes, you could say that. The Pancharatrik is the essential elements of the Vedic system that are focused specifically, either directly or supportive of, worshipping Vishnu. So they're called Ekayana. They're just focused on Vishnu. No demigods, nothing else. And so you can live a lifestyle like that quite comfortably. Devotees did it for years. And there's pujaris and things in India that live like that. They don't worry about anything else. Then, how much is recommended, you can add into the more general Vedic aparavidya as is required. You know, as is needed or as there's desire. You know, like that. But, you know, some Ayurveda for health, some astrology for working out, you know, when your children will get married, or, you know, things like that. But otherwise, then there's not so much need of the whole thing. You know, the history, so we see how people have engaged in Krishna consciousness, and what are the mistakes of those who weren't successful in Krishna consciousness. You know, like that. So, it comes in from there. You only add it because it's necessary. You don't take it as the main thing. So just as, see, here is the mistake, is that pro-Vedic means we take the Vedic, but we don't see it necessarily in its context of the secondary. Right? We take it that is, you know, the Krishna consciousness. Then the mistake of those who oppose it is it's not Krishna consciousness because it's secondary, but they replace it with a modern secondary and make that most important. So technically, there's no difference between the pro-Vedic and the, you know, the pro-modern or pro-Western. Is that they're two sides of one coin, and each one of them thinks the other one's totally wrong. So it's friends and enemies, therefore it's mundane. But the
in the modes of nature.
Yes. So therefore, that's why Prabhupada is talking about, is those who can understand how the Vedic system is secondary to devotional service can also understand how using modern elements are secondary also, and in fact secondary to the second Vedic secondary.
Yeah.
Means, in other words, the Vedic secondary is not applicable in that position, so you use the modern secondary to replace it. Not that it's replaced as equal.
Right.
Means it's an inferior tool, but because the point is Krishna consciousness, if it gets Krishna consciousness, then it's on equal standing.
It's like an emergency secondary.
Yes, it's an emergency secondary, but it works. You know, it's just like the guy comes in, he can't breathe. You find the guy on the side of the road, he can't breathe, and so to do a tracheotomy, then you take your pen, open it up like that, and jab it into his throat. That is not at all ideal, but it works. And when he gets to emergency, then those who are more mature, they'll go, wow, that was cool. And everybody else will go, what? Like that, and then they'll take him in and put in a nice little plastic pipe, you know, like that. Does that make sense? Yes. So, yes. Okay. Yes. So, That's important. Otherwise, these discussions on the pro-Vedic and anti-Vedic, they're actually a total waste of time. Not maybe total. Means the people outside of who have the faith in those two will get benefit from a mature discussion. But probably the discussion being put forward by those two groups won't be of any importance, because they're still both dealing with the attraction and aversion to the same thing, so the mundane aspect. Point is the Vedic is seeing that you have to use secondary to manifest primary, right? Means primary exists on its own, but you won't see it manifest without the secondary. Like Krishna exists on his own, but when his internal potency expands, then you'll be able to appreciate him and his pastimes. Right? But he exists on his own. He's independent. So primary is independent. Secondary manifests that, but without manifesting it has no meaning. The energy without Krishna is useless. So that's the whole point, is primary on its own is always useful. And when you're able to manifest it, then we can appreciate. Secondary, if it's connected to Krishna, it's useful. If it's not connected, it is useless. And we don't mean, well, no, but, you know, no, it's just useless. Once one has faith in that, accepts that, then one knows how to deal with it. But as long as one, no, but it has it, then one will always have problems. There'll always be cheating, imperfect senses, you know, illusion, and what's the last one? Making mistakes. Always it'll be there. Only when one sees it, that its only value is its extension from the primary, then one can be beyond those four defects. Otherwise, if one starts from there, you're starting with the defects, and how much you connect it, then you're reducing the defects. And if we want to be technical, right? So that's what we're doing here. Is we're seeing is that all these aspects are there. The secondary is there, but the real secondary is going to be connecting to Krishna. But how do we connect it to Krishna? Right? Means factually, if we want to say, okay, I want to offer this to Krishna, what's actually the connection to Krishna? It's the point being made here. Offering, but how can we offer it?
Through devotees.
Right? You understand? So that means then the secondary, the actual most important element of all the secondary aspects is the spiritual master. So therefore we can say is that when we say atta means the, you know, approaching, you know, now that the Prabhupada says, now that we, you know, in human life, now we inquire about the Supreme, or it's defined as those who are following the Vedic activities, then they go beyond that. But the whole point is Vedic culture itself, the application of Vedic culture, but then the real purpose of Vedic culture is spiritual, so that means the spiritual master. So in this way, then we can say atta means surrender to the spiritual master. We'll catch it again here. Because you'll see, no matter where it is in the Bhagavatam, no matter where it is in the Acharya's literature, they're always talking about surrender to the spiritual master. It is the common thing. Because if you know that, that's there, then approaching Krishna means something. So it's always about Krishna and our relationship with him through the spiritual master. So you always see that as a common thing. Because if that's there, then you can inquire, then you can apply it. Right? Pranipata. Then, you know, why? What's wrong? What's going on? Then Pari Prashna. Now I can inquire. Then having inquired, then I can apply it as seva. So this is what's being brought out. Is this first verse is about approaching the spiritual master and hearing from the spiritual master about subject matter connected to Krishna. That's what it begins. If that's there, then everything else can be seen in connection with that. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So this is the pratipya of the whole.
Yes, means with that. In other words, if we're talking about any of the other things, then what's the problem with the six schools? If we look at it, Now, they've approached a teacher, but have they approached a transcendental teacher? So, no. So, therefore, they can't know about Bhagavan. Now, let's say the followers of impersonal Vedanta, they've approached a teacher, and the teacher, you could say, is transcendental, meaning not of the material world, but they're not of the spiritual world either. Right? Because they can show you Brahman, but they can't show you the personality of Godhead. And so actually, when we say Brahman, because we say Brahman, why would you take the lowest? You would take the highest. So you have the material energy as Brahman, the jiva is Brahman, the internal potency is Brahman, and the Supreme Person is Brahman. So why wouldn't we take the Supreme Person? Because any of those other Brahmans don't necessarily include the others. Sarup Shakti includes all the three Shaktis. The jiva is only jiva, the material energy is only material energy. Right? But Shakti only Shakti, but Krishna includes the Sarup Shakti that includes all the other Shaktis. So by saying, if you want to just say in one word, Brahman, then you have to mean the Supreme Brahman means the person. Then the person, then Paramatma, Brahman, the internal potency, the jivas, the external energy, all is included in that one term. Otherwise, then you have to define, okay, this is this Brahman, and there's all these other Brahmans. Right? So if we want to say everything's Brahman, then we have to accept the person. Does that make sense? So we can see is that why they're going through so much trouble is so it's exactly clear essentially what's there. And if we're focused on that, then back from there to any other philosophy, any other science, then we can understand. As Prabhupada pointed out, the devotee, they understand Krishna, they can actually understand any other philosophy and science. So if we're fixed that, you know, it's about the Supreme Person, then anything that someone says, if it's in support of that, it's encouraged. If it's not, then it's pointed out what's wrong with that. If it's about you're going to do it on your own with speculation, no, you have to approach authority. Right? If we're not the soul, not the body, right, then there's a problem there. Does that make sense? So in that way, you can understand any other philosophy because they will not be that. Right? Except for Vaishnava Vedanta, that's the only thing where you have Achyut Ishwara, then the, what do you call it? The sadhana and sadhya. Right? So then you'll have that. Otherwise, no one else will have that complete. They'll have something, but it'll be very cloudy in parts. You know, and generally the part about who's God, who's the material world, and what's the jiva. You know, they'll be very exact on what is their sadhana, and but generally they're not even so clear on what the goal is either. Ideas that it should be nice, I should be happy. But then if you get into it, that even amongst themselves, they'll be fighting tooth and nail over what is the sadhana. And anything different from that, then they're not going to get any benefit.
Well, I observe that mistakes and failures are inevitable in any case, anywhere you put your endeavor.
Right.
So people who just came out of Vaishvayavana lifestyle,
what's the difference between Malecha and Yavana and Asura? It's like saying potato and olive.
So people try Vedanta, they're very enthusiastic, but when they see mistakes, they figure out that it's easier to associate with the Maya person to the...
But what is that? But how do you define easier and how do you define mistake?
If any type of, like, you follow the culture and there may be some problems.
Yeah, but is that to do with the Vedic culture, or that's to do with the material world?
Yeah. Well,
you understand? The whole point is there, is that it's not defined right. And what does it mean, associated with the karmis, there's no problem? Have you ever seen a newspaper? Where in there is it nice?
They're used to,
but that doesn't mean that it's without fault.
But the fault in Vedic culture, when the fault in Vedic culture is seen, because
there is no fault in Vedic culture.
I mean,
it's the fault in the person implying it.
So when you're applying effort, there will be obstacles that you have to overcome.
Yes, but that's the material world.
Yes, but because people are afraid of Bhagavan, they're not able to accept the culture because they're afraid to establish relationship with Krishna.
Okay.
This is the problem.
Okay. Yeah, we're fine. Bhagavatam verses. Srimad Bhagavatam 127. By rendering devotional service under the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. Right? So that's the thing, is that if you render service to Krishna, then this knowledge and detachment you're looking for in a Tato Brahma Jigyasa is automatically coming. 128. The occupational activities a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor. They do not provoke attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead. Right? So, having performed the Vedic activities, atta, if it doesn't bring us to the point of devotional service, it's just a waste of time. And as Prabhupada points out, I'm not sure in this purport, other purports, is that if we've already thrown out the topmost, we've thrown out everything else. If we say 100 rupees is useless, that means 10 rupees is also. So if you've thrown out the Vedic culture, that means any other kind of culture that one may dream up is also thrown out. Not, oh, see, the Vedas are useless, so we'll follow the modern. No, that's been thrown out. That, in other words, when we throw the Vedic culture out, on the bottom of the Vedic culture shoes that we threw out the door was the Western culture. So it went out the door also. Right? Is that what somebody said? We have to... Yeah.
Can we say that here we speak about internal also?
Yes, because otherwise, why would it be useless unless it is, if it does not provoke attraction for the message of the Lord? So if in performing our occupational duties, it doesn't make us advance in Krishna consciousness, it's a waste of time. We can say, no, but it gets money, you need money and this and that, blah. But okay, but unless the money is increasing our attachment to Krishna, what's the use? Yudhishthir Maharaj had, you know, oodles of money, you know. How would you, you can't even use buckets, you can't use wheelbarrows, what? Boatloads, you know, and what we mean is, you know, these big tanker loads, you know, of money. And it provokes his attraction to Krishna. So he's using it properly. So the point is, we can never say, oh, this is necessary so I don't have to see its connection to Krishna. Right? We're inferring that it's connected, but we actually have to connect it. Right? And when we do, then it has value. So that means if it's connected to Krishna, anything has value. And if it's not connected to Krishna, nothing has value. Right? So again, like the first one, is okay, we by rendering devotional service to the Lord, then we get knowledge and detachment. How do we render service? Under the direction of the spiritual master. Like here, how will we know how to perform occupational duties connected to the Lord? Then the spiritual master. Yes. Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also about the different philosophies and methods. Then I have this knowledge, supreme knowledge. Then when I listen, it makes for me a lot of sense. And I see in the process is connected to knowledge. Connected to Krishna, I found it useful.
Right.
But they practice only one part without Krishna, and then it's incomplete.
Yes.
For me, it's useful because I see.
Yes.
So that's because of that perspective, right? Understanding all of these things becoming useful, even if it's not directly talking about.
Yes, it's just, yes. The whole idea is that everything is connected to Krishna. You just have to see that connection. You see the connection, it's useful. But generally is that if we have somebody who's more directly connected and is doing the same thing, we would take that over something that's less direct. You know what I'm saying? It's saying the same thing, but it's because we understand the how the Vedanta is explained. Therefore, when we see other philosophies, we can see where they fit into parts of it. But the point is they never complete the circuit. Right? And so people, because they see the secondary, then they think that is the religion, rather than they see as, no, the primary is the religion. So that's why it's recommended you follow secondary aspects that are more directly connected with the primary. They have a natural connection, so that while we're on that external kind of view, at least it's closer. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let us say, the bus is there, you're waiting for the door to open. You know, so you could wait inside the station, or you could wait next to the bus. Right? So if you're next to the bus, then when the door opens, then you just get in. The other one, then you have to get up, go outside, go through the door, there's the crowd, then walk over to the bus, like that. But it's the same thing. But it's just, it's not as streamlined. Right? So therefore the Vedic recommendations. But religion comes from the Lord, therefore all religions will actually be discussing the same thing. Right? You know, it's just a matter of where they're positioned connected to the bus. Like that. Okay. 129. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to the two sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. Right? So here, mistake will be also, that means, okay, we see the first part is certainly meant for the ultimate liberation, so it's just taking that next thing. So all the duties are just meant for that. Then, doing that, they shouldn't be performed for material gain. Because if we're doing that, then it's sakam. We don't get the position of detachment. And when there's attachment, then we are going to tend towards sense gratification. Right? So here it says, should never be used for material gain for sense, to cultivate sense gratification. So here it doesn't mean engaging the senses. Some will say, oh, you shouldn't engage the senses. You know, shouldn't eat anything nice, dress anything nice, do anything nice, smell anything nice, you know, like that. But that's the impersonal approach to this. It means you shouldn't see any engagement of the senses without its connection to Krishna. Right? Because if I see it separate from Krishna, that's cultivating sense gratification. If I see the senses engaged, connected to Krishna, that's cultivating bhakti. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So there may be some interest in attachment, but because we're connecting it to Krishna, it will be progressive. But if we just think, okay, Krishna consciousness is one thing, and then I got my life as another, that will be regressive. Right?
One side is sense gratification, the other is yukta-vairagya?
Yes. And then also it's bhakti. So yukta-vairagya means is that there's something that we are attached to, but we're giving it up for Krishna. Right? But then the ultimate point comes is that you don't make a distinction because it's for Krishna anyway. It's not about yourself and your sense gratification. So by not cultivating sense gratification, by always cultivating things connected to Krishna, then we can get to that point. So then it just naturally comes, we see everything connected to Krishna. So it's a very natural lifestyle. So saying, oh, this Western Vedic is so unnatural. No, it's the most natural. It's the only natural. One is natural to the soul, and it's natural in human life, and it also works the best. Otherwise, if it doesn't work better, then what's the point of? You know. Yes. So it's trying to get us to accept the point that all these different activities that are important are only important when they're connected to Krishna. And without Krishna, no matter how wonderful they may seem, they're actually a waste of time.
You say that Krishna is the primary, but if you're like giving up or engaging something for Krishna, always makes sense of everyone. But like what I've heard in Russia, the sincerity and faith can be there. It's so heartfelt, but if it's not done to a proper performance of your duties, then it's like. Then it doesn't make sense, even though the goal is so set up.
Yes, yes. It just means either philosophy is missing or religion is missing. And so there'll be a shortcoming. So all we have to do is add in the one that's missing. So it's not that you throw out what's there, you add what's missing. You know, if you can only find one shoe, you don't throw it out. You keep it until you find the other shoe. Otherwise, you throw it out, then when you find the other shoe, then you only have that. Yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam 1-10. Life's desires should never be directed towards sense gratification. Because right? We're seeing something, we should never... And it's about the senses. That's not a problem. But seeing how all enjoy that engagement of the senses, that's cultivating sense gratification. Seeing how that opportunity to engage the senses to serve Krishna, that's devotional service. Right? Very important point. You can see it's so important, it's right there in the first bit. Yeah.
We see because of lack of training or out of habit, that usually what happens, the mind goes. And then we bring it back with the intelligence.
Yes.
But you still feel that that's what you desire because you identify more with the mind than with the intelligence. Does it fall into this?
That would be the habit. But because you brought it back, that's the sadhana, that's the practice.
If you don't act on it, but just the inner desire, you know, it just pops up
yes.
And then goes back.
But that's just the habit. That's what we're trying to purify. So if you keep now engaging the senses in its correct way, that knowledge and detachment will come where that those things popping up will be less and less.
And identification with this, with the mind.
That will become less and less also. In other words, the mind is something that does something. It's just like, let's say your computer, you put things into it, it crunches them, it comes up with something. Is it you?
Depends.
Depends how good it is. You know, if it's the latest, you know, something and you're walking and the other people see it and, you know, then it is, right? Yeah. So the idea is it's not us. So the mind, that's what it does. The mind, the intelligence, the ego, it simply takes sensory information and according to emotions, according to math, according to identity, processes it and comes up with a solution. Right? That's what it does. So when we, with time, we'll start to see this difference. It's a practice. It takes time because we've been, since time immemorial, all doing this. But devotional service is so powerful that within a short time, one can accomplish that. Is that what it says? Life's desire should never be directed towards sense gratification. One should desire only a healthy life or self-preservation, since a human being is meant for inquiry about the absolute truth. Nothing else should be the goal of one's work. Right? So it's only about inquiring about the absolute truth. So now we see as we've done that, atta atta, now we're getting more into that inquiry. Right? Because the rendering devotional service, okay, knowledge and detachment, that gives the overall why it should be done. Then the occupational duties are mentioned, the position of sense gratification and artha, right? And then here it shouldn't be directed towards that, it should only be directed towards the absolute. So we can see is that it's dealt with the aspect of atta atta, right? But this point is Brahma Jigyasa. Okay. 2.11. A learned transcendentalist who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. Right? So non-dual, so when we talk about Brahman, we mean the three. Right? You can't have one without the other. Krishna is a person, but he has unlimited potencies, and they extend everywhere, and they take care of everything. So that means and that they fall, and it follows a pattern. That means there's generic. That's the impersonal. That he manages that impersonal aspects, that's Paramatma. But where they're coming from is because there's a person. Right? So all, you can't have one without the other. You may have one level of realization, but it doesn't mean that Krishna, let's say we're Brahman realized, but Krishna's still Bhagavan. Right? We're not Buddhists where we're not in the forest and the tree falls over and it doesn't make any sound. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The question would be, does it make sound when it falls over on top of us?
We make a sound.
Ah, yeah. The tree doesn't make, but we make the sound. That's getting deep, right? Okay. And then Srimad Bhagavatam 111. O my Lord, Sri Krishna, son of Vasudeva, all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance and destruction of the manifested universes. These verses, these are ones, these are Baladeva, or this is Sahotramana?
These ones? Never mentioned by
they're all mentioned. These, this group. Okay. So there's a natural. So we see is that these groups, these verses, then they naturally give the commentary, the purport on the first verse.
Even on the
they all use. Yeah. See. So that's where the natural thing is. When we say Bhagavatam is a natural commentary, all the acharyas accept that. Right? How much they focus on it's another thing, but it's a natural. Like that. Okay. Is this a continuation? Oh, this continuation of the verses. Okay. I was going to say it's quite a short for the first verse. Okay. Yes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as what is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusory representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. Right? So that's fully bringing out what Bhagavan means. Right? All the different aspects. You know, because one before it said, he's known in these three aspects of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. This verse then gives the full explanation of that. Right? So this verse is, I meditate upon him. Right? So I should be inquiring about him, understanding him, meditating upon him. So this gives it full. So the connection between the first verse of Bhagavatam and the first sutra of the Vedanta Sutra is the same. Then 1339. Only by making such inquiries in this world can one be successful and perfectly cognizant. For such inquiries invoke transcendental ecstatic love under the personality of Godhead, who is the proprietor of all the universes, and guarantees 100% immunity from the dreadful repetition of birth and death. Right? So now here's the result. Only by inquiring can you get to the transcendental platform in a relationship with the Supreme Lord. That will actually stop the repetition of birth and death. Because anything else won't. Even you practice impersonalism, you come to the Brahman platform, it does not stop birth and death. It just puts it off for a while. You know? Somebody said, yeah. But it's still, one will come back. Right? But this then means one will not come back. So then that finishes that. So clear about this? So therefore, Atta Atta ha, means that the Atta means is that having accepted the Vedic process accepting a spiritual master, one inquires about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, His name, form, qualities, and pastimes. It is three features of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And in that way, practices devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master. One comes to the transcendental position of a relationship with the Lord. One solves the problems of repeated birth and death in the material world by situating yourself eternally in a relationship with the Lord in the spiritual realm. Okay? So Vyasadeva was able to put that into three words. Okay, Sutra 112. Janmadyasyayataha. From that Brahman arise creation, maintenance, and destruction of this universe. Commentary by Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami again takes aim at the impersonalist speculators and stresses that this sutra establishes Brahman as personal and with form. The word Janmadi here does not modify the Supreme. Here the Supreme is not the person who meditates. Rather, He is the supremely pure object of meditation. Furthermore, the Supreme, that's how they use word jugglery, is they'll try to make it that the Supreme here is doing the meditation. So therefore, the Lord, their idea is the Lord will transform into Vishnu in the mode of, that's who is in the mode of goodness. And then in that form, He'll meditate upon the Supreme Brahman that is formless. So this is how they just juggle the words around. So in other words, the spin doctoring's been around a long time, just before it started up on the philosophical. And then from there it dropped down to advantage for the administrative class. But otherwise, it's many times thought that they're the ones who... No, this came up way before. How to spin something to your own advantage. That's the importance of parampara. You hear, what is it you're supposed to do? Otherwise, just that I have an idea, I spin it how I want, and then that's actually good politic, or that's good philosophy. No, it has to come from parampara, as we established in the last verse. By approaching the spiritual master, then we can understand the absolute. Then, whatever platform we look at it, in the creation, maintenance, or destruction, right, connection to the Lord, then we can see things properly. Otherwise, we'll just spin it to however we like. So that word jugglery then is there. So in other words, what have we done? Just like if we sang about the verses where Prabhupada's talking about utilizing if we go out in the dhotis and this and that, then that has so much advantage, but then there are some demoniac elements that they don't appreciate that, so then we'll use whatever forms will be useful for them. So in there, what's the primary?
The message
getting distributed. What's the secondary?
The
clothing that one's wearing. Now, for those who are attached to, you know, to the secondary, they'll switch the position of the secondary from being an instrument, right, into actually being the object. You understand? So they've grammatically juggled the verse. Because, no, it's okay to wear this because, you know, in other words, yes, as an instrument, but they're making it as a goal. But then if it's the goal, then the problem comes, what's the data? What's the result? Because it's not about them being Krishna conscious. They'll say it's about that, but the talk's always about what they're doing. Or even they put him back to the subject. But it's never the instrumental. You understand? This is word juggling. Is you take a word that's in something and you move it around but grammatically until it means what you want. Which, you know, especially Sanskrit, you can do it. English is really easy to do. You know, you just put a comma in or take a comma out or emphasize something. Like that, it totally changes the meaning. It's a great language for poetics and certain things and discussing some fine points, but on another level, it's a disaster. Does that make sense? This is the meaning of word juggling. So what we see is that Jiva Goswami is addressing this, that they're going to apply this, that therefore the Janmadi that they're taking it that it's the Lord that's meditating, rather than we're meditating on the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
What would be their pramana, except for Sanskrit?
It's just that their pramana will go back to Shankara. Then, one, is if you're dealing with before Shankara, it's just the speculation. Somebody comes up with that. There's heads of the impersonal lines. You know, there's always some head. And he's thinking and all that, and he comes up with that speculation. And because he's smarter than other people, then he can defend it. You know, it's just like you have your PhD. It can be total speculation, but if you can defend it, you get your doctorate.
And what would be the reason that Roman has to meditate? For what?
Because then they're pointing out that all this creation, maintenance, destruction, and all that is actually outside of Brahman, so it doesn't exist. So they're trying to get rid of that there's anything other than the formless. So any activity, any thought, any... So therefore, these verses militate against their philosophy. But then they use. The advantage why Shankara would use this, because it's so short, if I give a definition of the word, then I accept that, then I go on speculating from there. Right? Because he doesn't address every sutra. He'll just address certain sutras. So it appears he must have addressed the first four.
Yeah.
Otherwise, why does everybody put so much commentary?
Yeah.
Yes.
Also, when it says Jagannitya, this whole world is illusion, it's just the meditation of the Supreme. And so you can snap out of that and then have an attack. So basically, they're saying the world is not real.
Yes. But when you snap out of it,
you're the Supreme, and then you can snap out of it.
But then if you snap out of it, then there's nothing to snap out of. So, but you don't exist to have snapped out of it. So it doesn't, it's not actually very inspiring.
You have to become free from the tendency of snapping out of it.
Yes. Or you have to become free from the tendency to be meditating to snap out of, because there's nothing to snap out of, and there is no one to snap out of.
Wait a minute, that's not me.
Yeah, that's the whole point. That's why we say it's just borrowed Buddhism. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so instead of mu, you have om, that's all. Mm-hmm. I guess mu, and you just turned around, you got om.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, they're clever. The Lord's clever. Lord Shiva's clever. Does that make sense? So all we're bringing out is that we've heard about the mental speculation, so this is what they're doing with it. They just take the word and define it in a different way. And so with that, then you can go. You know. So we do it all the time, just that we don't know, because we're not trained in grammar, we're not trained in logic and all that, so we don't know that we're doing that anyway. You know, we pick it up from others. They do it, we pick that up. So, yeah.
Making this kind of a word juggling, there has to be a logical connection between the first sutra and the second sutra, then it makes sense. Otherwise, if they're disconnected, then
yes, 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 yes. It's natural, because it being the first one, everything else has to be based on that. But yes, but they'll just say it's a time to inquire about Brahman, and so therefore they'll just use the Brahman as the thing. What we see is we're defining Brahman and Jigyasu, but we're putting most emphasis on Atta. Like that. I think in the commentary original it's like 15 pages on Atta or something. I'm not sure, but someone was telling me it's like 15 pages of Atta Atta. Yeah. The first verse, one whole book. Okay, yeah. Well, I guess Bhaktisiddhanta says what he talked about. He also, the first verse?
Well, Bhagavatam.
Yeah, he spoke for 90 days or something.
3 months.
3 months, yeah, so, okay. That's amazing, huh? Okay. The word Janmadi here does not modify the Supreme. Here the Supreme is not the person who meditates. Rather, he is the supremely pure object of meditation. Furthermore, the Supreme is the creator of the material world, which was described here by the words Janmadi. Because he is the creator of the material world, the Supreme is all-powerful, all-knowing, the controller of all, and the person whose every desire is at once fulfilled. This is confirmed by the following words of Mundaka Upanishad 119. The Supreme is all-knowing and all-powerful. This is also confirmed by these words of Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.22. The Supreme dominates and controls everyone. The impersonalists claim that the words Brahma Jigyasa at the beginning of Vedanta Sutra refer to the qualityless impersonal Brahman. By explaining that these words of Vedanta Sutra describe someone who is the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of the material world, Janmadi Asya Yataha. Srimad Bhagavatam here refutes the impersonalist idea, right? So, because if you say there's only Brahman in the first verse, then how is it here there's creation, maintenance, and destruction? That means there has to be transformation, there has to be these things, and they're not illusion. Because right? if it's going to be Sangati, it's going to be based on the first verse, then there can't be illusion here. So then that means that Brahman has to be able to create, maintain, and destroy. That means there must be a person. Yes?
How is it possible that some form of Brahma, everything is created in some kind of form?
How 4 months of Brahma?
Formless.
Formless Brahman.
Yeah. How is it possible by the person of
You have a field. You have a field. 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 Yes? Field. Field. Russian. He's not Russian. Oh, he's Croatian. Oh, okay. Just say the Russian with an Italian accent, he'll catch it. No? No, okay. Field, you know how there's a strange thing, you go out, there's earth, there's dirt, right? And you plow the dirt and it becomes flat, right? Field. You plant some seeds there. Then they grow into a plant. What's the plant made out of?
Material energy.
But which material energy? Your refrigerator?
Five,
but which ones? The ones that your couch are made of? Or? You don't know which one?
From Earth.
Okay, from Earth. Okay, and which Earth? Try to keep a connection here. There's a thread. There's a field. Let's say we take this house here. We plow the ground here. Okay? Okay? Dirt, right? Earth. We plant seeds here. Plants grow. Fruits come. What is that plants and fruits made out of? Right? They're a transformation of the earth. Which earth? This earth here that we just plowed. But you get so much variety in any kind of plant we put, we can get any. So that means of all the, what is it, how many trees in that? Is it 1.2 or 1.2 or 1.1, something like that, million varieties of species, they'll all grow out of the earth.
Yes.
Okay? Yes. Okay, no, that's not the question yet. So they've all grown out of the earth. So how is it, but the earth is just this flat piece with no form and no shape and that. How did we get all this form and variety? Now do you understand?
The question is, in person, how explains that from formless Brahma, everything comes in what we see has a form?
They don't have an explanation.
They don't have an explanation.
No.
And then their philosophy is, has a form.
Yes. Very good.
Why do they not accept the philosophy that doesn't have faults?
Because they like the faults.
They like the faults.
They're attached to the faults. You understand? Like that. They're attached to the fault because the fault is that they can be God. Right? You know, it's like if you get frustrated in something, then you always think of an extreme, you know, how you say,
reaction
to something. So if I can't control here as God on the small level, then I'll perform sadhana where I become God on the big level, right? Makes sense, right? If I can't become God, small God, I can easily become big God. Right? I can't make 10 rupees, but I can make, you know, millions. You know, it's like, you know, of course, right? Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that if it's all illusion, that all there is Brahman, and that there's only that one Brahman, I become that Brahman, so I'm God. So they're attached to the concept I'm God. That's why they fall for it. It doesn't make any sense.
Similar, can we take an example? If somebody is popular and the person comes to that popular person, he becomes immediately popular.
If he has a big enough grin and he can get enough pictures taken and you can get them uploaded, you know, then you do fairly well. Like that. There's a name for that. You know, that, you know, somebody who's a celebrity not because they've done something, but they're associated with other celebrities. You know, like the Kardashians are an example. Yes. Yeah, they're famous for just being around people who are famous, yeah. So like that. That's the nothing. Good. Oh, okay. The impersonalists claim that the words Brahma Jigyasa at the beginning of Vedanta Sutra refer to the qualityless impersonal Brahman. By explaining that these words of Vedanta Sutra describe someone who is the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of the mature world, Janmadyasya Yataha, Srimad Bhagavatam here refutes the impersonalist idea. The impersonalist idea is also refuted by these words of the scriptures. The Supreme is the greatest. No one is as great as He. The Supreme is the original cause of the material world. Right, so these will be also Upanishadic, right? The truth is that the words of Vedanta Sutra, the scripture, verses, the truth is that the words of Vedanta Sutra, the scripture verses quoted in the Vedanta Sutra, and the Vedic scriptures themselves do not support the impersonalist idea. Logic also refutes the impersonalist idea, because the Supreme must be the origin of all goals. Also notice here in logic, right, we've gone to the next thing, but now we've made our statement. With that statement, then doubt will come up. Right, so now we're starting to deal more with the doubt. Right, the first verse we just established what is the appropriate thing. Even though there at that point we see the impersonalists have their own idea, but because of that, then the doubt comes out in the second one. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's
What's our statement then?
No, I'm saying this is a complete statement its own. But I'm just saying is even in that, because the Sangati having made that statement, then now the impersonalist doubt will be addressed, right? Because it will come up, because they'll say, no, but Brahman is impersonal, but here it's saying it's not.
Right? So this pattern for every sutra, where you have the doubts of the impersonalist coming up and then be refuting them?
Yes, that'll always be. But it's just a matter of, in these first four or more than that, there each one sutra is a complete adhikarana in itself. So it has all the aspects. Right, you know, just the last one, then you have that approaching the Supreme. So then that means that there can't, means that the Vedic literatures on their own can't be understood without approaching a devotee. Right, then by doing that, then all of the one can actually understand what is transcendental? What is the position like that? Therefore, then approaching the spiritual master, one should inquire about the Supreme. Right? So one is now is time to inquire about the Supreme. And how does that form look? It means that you're going to approach the spiritual master and therefore inquire about the Supreme. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. So here's then we're saying that the Supreme Lord is the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of everything. Right? So therefore then that means he can't be impersonal. Because the doubt will come up, no, but the Supreme is impersonal. So he can't be if he's the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. And then the verses that are quoted here then are supporting that. So he's saying is that the Vedanta Sutra itself, the scriptures quoted in the Vedanta Sutra, and the Vedic scriptures, they don't support. Logic also refutes the impersonalist idea, because the Supreme must be the origin of all goals that are to be obtained, to be attained, as well as all methods that may be adopted to attain the goals. Right? Because you have a goal. That goal has to have a method to get it. You can't get a goal without a method. And that method has to have an origin. Right? It means the elements that it's made of, the knowledge that's used, the inspiration and attitude that's used, right? Like that. That all has to be there. So that all comes from the Supreme. That's the meaning of the creation, maintenance, and destruction. Right? He is the one that then makes all this happen. To obtain these goals, the Supreme cannot be impersonal or qualityless. It is not appropriate to say that the material world is an illusion that is manifested from the Supreme. These words make no sense. In this way, it is proved that the Supreme cannot be impersonal or qualityless. Right? Because if I am here, I am going to follow a process by which I come to the transcendental platform. I'm acknowledging all the three aspects of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So that means there must be qualities. There has to be some endeavor. And in acknowledging that, then the point comes is that we've acknowledged that, but then how can there be this being, can be there in a qualityless Brahman? So we say there's a process, then there has to be more, and we're going to use something. They're going to use the sannyasa ashram, they're going to use knowledge, they're going to apply that, they're going to come to realization. But if Brahman is qualityless and there's nothing, then there isn't anything in the first place. So what's the point of the endeavor? Why should you're already Brahman, so there's no need to make any endeavor at all. In fact, you don't exist, so therefore why make an endeavor? Taking a step further, right? You can't talk to the hand, talk to the moon, right? There's nothing there, right? Does that make sense? So there's nothing. So therefore their whole philosophy is, by their own definition, totally bogus. So the point is here by the Vedanta Sutra, it's establishing that he's the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. Therefore these three aspects are there. And so because these three aspects are there, therefore then there must be qualities. Because if we're going to have ingredients, each ingredient has to have a quality. When you apply them, they'll give a result that has qualities. Yes?
So I was going to explain this in the purport in a couple of pages.
Oh, okay.
But he explains that because Janmadhyasya path is what begins the Vedanta Sutra, but it's the first verse of Bhagavatam.
Right.
So Vyasadeva is taking pains to explain that first verse immediately off the bat and expanding on it by saying Abhidhyaswara. He's actually all-knowing, supreme consciousness, and he's completely independent. And so he can't be inert matter. He's the force that actually sets the whole process into into motion.
Right.
So that requires some kind of qualities and some kind of desire and volition.
Yes.
So it immediately has to be
in Bhagavatam. Because that's the earliest part of the verse.
First line.
Yeah. Okay. Make it very clear. Okay. Okay. The impersonalists may try to claim that the words Tejo Vadimridam in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam support their idea. However, the word Janmadhyasya Yataha refute all their claims. Because the Supreme has many potencies, therefore he has qualities and he is a person. Tejo Vadimridam?
The illusory representation of earth seen in the water.
Oh, okay, from the later. Yeah. They're taking the later part there. Yeah. Yeah, what they don't, Prabhupada also mentions on that is that the point is that these things exist, that's why you can compare them. They say, oh, you're taking the rope to be a snake, and it's not. It's an illusion that it's a snake. But there is such a thing as a snake. Otherwise, why would you think the rope's a snake? Okay. Yeah. It's also interesting, water and fire, and earth on water. Is that when you have it when it's hot because of the heat, then you see water like that, and then you have water, and then if you see reflected, you see land on the water, but it's not there. Okay.
but land exists.
Land exists, yeah, like that. Or water exists, so these things exist. Interesting that water is the common point.
Because it reflects.
Well, one reflects, and the other one then is just you're seeing it within it. Because of the movement of fire, because of movement, you see that there will be something there. Action, you expect there'll be some taste, some experience. Like that. But the point is by action, the experience we gain is illusory. It's a mirage. Just like when you see in the desert, it's fire, it's hot, you see water. You know, or on the road. You know, when you're driving on the highway when it's summer and then you see there's water on the road. So it's not there, but it's expected from. So when you perform an activity, you expect that there's going to be a result that gives taste. Because water is rasa. You know? Or in rasa, whatever we're tasting, in the material rasa, then we think that there is substance. But it's an illusion. So for both ways, it's an illusion. Only when it's connected to Krishna, then it's real. So actions connected to Krishna gives real rasa. Right? The rasa that's there in Krishna and his pastimes with the devotees, that actually has substance. So there's no illusion there. So it's not that the material works on one set of rules, the spiritual or another. No, the original rules are from the spiritual world. But here, they just are applied so that basically they're hollow. They don't have any substance. So it's an illusion that we think it is real when it's not. That's the meaning of it. But it exists. So what doesn't exist is the happiness we'll get, the taste we'll get, the satisfaction we'll get. That's the illusion. But the water, the mountain, you know, the fire, they all exist. But what we think we'll get from them, that's what doesn't exist. The impersonalist idea is done though, we're farther down. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has three potencies. One, antaranga, internal. Two, bahiranga, external. And three, tatastha, marginal. The external potency, which is also called Maya, creates, maintains, and annihilates the material universes. The marginal potency is we, living entities, who meditate dhimahi on the Supreme. Although material energy is the immediate cause of the material world, because that material potency is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, it is the Supreme Lord who is the ultimate cause of the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the material universes. Probably uses that in cause. There's the material cause and then the
efficient cause.
Yeah, the original. Formal cause, efficient. So, is that she's taking care of these things, but because she's a potency connected to the Lord, she's taking care on behalf of the Lord. So ultimately it's the Lord who's created, just he doesn't do it himself. Okay. So, yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupāda ki.